देवाया ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're reading every night from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, 13th chapter. We're doing one verse, one section of verses, verses 8 through 12. Krishna, 13th chapter, describes nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness. Nature being the field of activities, enjoyer sometimes is referred to as the living entity in the material world, and consciousness is the supreme consciousness or Krishna consciousness. How does consciousness be affected by the living entity and its pursuit to falsely try to enjoy the material energy? The living entity is not the enjoyer. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, 5th chapter, and he is bhokta. Bhokta means supreme enjoyer. In other words, all enjoyment is meant for Krishna, and all living entities are parts and parcels of Krishna. They're meant to give enjoyment for Krishna. So the material world is simply a manifestation of the desire of the living entities to enjoy separately from Krishna. And in that material world, there's a variety of ways that the living entity tries to enjoy. There are unlimited ways. There's all expressions of the false ego. Krishna explains in this chapter that the field of activities is the body, and the extensions of the body in the body is the means by which the living entity tries to enjoy. Using the mind and the five senses, using the mind and the 11 senses actually, 10 senses, the living entity tries to enjoy this material world. And this enjoyment is the reason why the living entity stays bound up in this material energy. So there's a way out of this, and that is to develop knowledge. Knowledge of Krishna, knowledge of devotional service, and the qualities that are necessary in order to execute devotional service effectively. So in these five verses we've been speaking about these qualities, and Krishna lists them. And so we'll read again those qualities. And so far in the last few days, we've been taking each night two or three of these qualities. We hope to finish this section by tomorrow evening, the remainder of the qualities. So we'll read that. Amanitvam adambitvam ahimsam shante arjivam acharyopasanam saucham stayam Atma vinigraham indriyateshu vairagyam anahankara evacha janma mrityu jaravyadi dukha dosha nudarshanam anashakti anabhishvagam putra dharam grahadishu nityam cha samatyatvatvam istanista papatishu maye chananyana Yogena bhaktir avyavicharini vivikta desha sevitvam anatir jana samsadi adhyatma jnanam mityatvam tatva jnana artha darshanam etat jnanam itam proktam ajnanam yad atonyata. So Krishna lists humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. So we've been reading the introductory section of the purport that precedes the qualities that are listed here. So I've read that each night, so rather than go into that again, I'll just summarize that the embodied soul is trapped in the casemates of 24 elements. So this process here, these 20 items of knowledge are meant for getting out. But Prabhupada says that unless one takes a devotional service, Krishna conscious, the other 19 items automatically developed. But if one does not take to Krishna conscious, then these other 19 items have no meaning. So we've been listing the qualities. So we've done humility, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of evil, of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and arrest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. So that's as far as we got. Now we'll go on to the next one. The next one is unalloyed devotion to me. Devotional service to Krishna without deviation means engaging oneself in the 9 processes of devotional service: chanting, hearing, worshipping, offering respect, etc. As described in the last verse of the 9th chapter, this process should be followed. So this is, of course, the most important one. Prabhupada just says 2 sentences. And to summarize that point, unalloyed devotion to me is practically self-explanatory. That means that one should desire only to serve the Lord. And if one has other desires, one should understand that one can fulfill all of one's desires through the process of bhakti. That, in other words, one should not cultivate or try to satisfy any desire separate from devotional service. And by performing devotional service, it is like having $1,000,000. When you have $1,000,000, you have $100, you have $1,000, you have $500,000. So what that means is that by performing devotional service, as Krishna explains, everything else follows. And without devotional service, even though we may cultivate everything else separately, they really don't have any meaning. It's like spokes without a hub. There's nothing to connect it all together, and then the spokes cannot really give any support to the wheel. The hub needs to be there to connect the spokes together, and that is a devotional service to the Lord. And he says unalloyed devotion. That means pure devotion. Unalloyed means not necessarily one has to become a pure devotee. What it means is that one has to somehow or other make one's desire Krishna's desire, or make Krishna's desire one's desire. In other words, find out what Krishna wants and just simply execute that. That is unalloyed devotional service. One may still have material desires within their heart. One may still have material attractions within their heart. One may still be affected by the material modes of nature. That may still be there of one of who has unalloyed devotion. But gradually that will all disappear as one progresses in their devotion. Monoloid means that's my only goal in life. So Srila Prabhupada said one can do that immediately. One can resolve within their minds and their hearts at any time that from now on, Krishna, I'm yours. Simply engage me in your service and just accept Krishna's directive for you, for your life. If you do that, that is unadorned devotional service to the Lord. So, and that means, and here Prabhupada says, it's understood by the nine processes. Chanting, hearing, worshipping, offering respects, serving the lotus feet, offering prayers, becoming a friend, carrying out orders, surrendering everything like that, remembering the Lord. There are nine processes, and any one of the processes can help one become perfect, but one can engage in all nine. We do that practically. We at least engage in seven of the processes here in the temple. The last two we don't engage in regularly is becoming a friend and surrendering everything. These are on the spontaneous platform, Raganuga platform. They develop when one is fixed solely in Krishna consciousness. Then one may develop a relationship with Krishna as a friend, and one may come to the point of surrendering everything. Manaso deho geho yokichu mo apitu tu anpade nanda kishore. My nanda kishore, my home, my mind, my body, my wife, my friends, whatever I have, my possessions, they all belong to you. That's surrendering everything. So we follow the process and ultimately we get the results. So we can discuss unalloyed devotional service, but I don't think we need to really go into that much detail. We can just simply mention it and try to develop it. That's the process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Of course, the most important part is to chant the holy names of the Lord, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And hear Srimad Bhagavatam and take Krishna Prasadam and work together to serve the Lord like that. It all begins with chanting the glories of the Lord and hearing. Actually, it all begins with hearing. Hearing the message of the Lord. Okay, so that's a little bit on that point of unalloyed devotion. Any questions?
Do you think that even though you might have other desires, that separate desires from your desire for Krishna, you just do what Krishna wants, serve Krishna, continue in the devotional service, that the other desires will disappear?
Yeah, because the process of devotional service means the process of purifying oneself. So, therefore, we have to simply ignore our material desires.
So what happens if the material desires are so strong, even though you're ignoring them, they keep agitating your mind?
Yeah, dude, it's like that.
It does suffering. That's mental suffering.
Well, you can do two things. You can act on them and relieve the suffering for a few seconds and then they come back again. Or you can ignore them and then they will get stronger and stronger as you ignore them. And finally they'll get so strong that, you know, you want to cry out for Krishna. But then at one point they'll just disappear. You just have to tolerate it. Toleration means not like the artificial, the Mayavadis, they tolerate the difficulties of the material energy, but they have no positive program. Krishna consciousness is a positive program that we tolerate by engaging in Krishna service, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, worshipping the Lord. That way, as we're engaging in the service of the Lord, we're actually meant to get a taste for this activity, and therefore, you know, we easily, it helps us to transcend these desires. So even while we're engaging in Krishna consciousness, the desires are there too. But we, if you don't ignore them, then you'll ultimately fall prey to them. You know, you're in the material world. The material world means a place of sense gratification. So if we simply cater to the demands of our senses, then we become victimized by that. So we have to make the mind strong by the process of hearing and chanting and studying this philosophy. Get the mind very strong. When this mind becomes strong, then although there are temptations and agitations, the mind can withstand that. The mind is weak. Our devotional consciousness is weak. And then when we do get attacked, we become victimized. Okay? Yeah, and Krishna never said, when you come to devotional service, it's the primrose path of joy. And it's there, but it's there in the later stages, not in the beginning. Beginning, there is some forms of happiness, but they're flickering. A mixed devotee means sometimes experiencing Krishna consciousness and sometimes experienced Maya. So we're mixed devotees, going back and forth. The idea is to keep yourself fixed in the service. As we keep us, just keep yourself steadily engaged in Krishna service. The service itself is what carries us through. We don't serve because of our pleasure, we serve because of Krishna's pleasure. So as long as we keep a service attitude, we can ride over these waves of Maya. That's the only way you can do it, with a strong service attitude. Okay? Okay. So that's unalloyed devotion. The next one is living in a solitary place. Aspiring to live in a solitary place. Prabhupada's purport. Naturally, when one is adapted to the spiritual way of life, he will not want to mix with materialistic persons. That would go against his grain. One may test oneself by seeing how far he is inclined to live in a solitary place without unwanted association. A natural devotee has no taste for unnecessary sporting or cinema going or enjoying some social function because he understands that these are simply a waste of time. There are so many research scholars and philosophers who study sex life or some other object. But according to Bhagavad Gita, such research work and philosophical speculation has no value. This is more or less nonsensical. According to Bhagavad Gita, one should make research by philosophical discretion into the nature of the soul. One should make research to understand the self. That is recommended here. He's also covering 2 points here. Detachment from the general mass of people. Accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical... So pretty much summing up the whole section here. Prabhupada just mentions these things. So, unwanted association or living in a solitary place. Living in a solitary place means living in a temple or living in some holy place, like Vrindavan or Mayapur or like that. Living in a holy place means living in a solitary place or living in a temple. And that's detachment from the general mass of people, because the general mass of people are materialistic, and devotees don't want to associate in that arena because it just brings one into that energy. So one has to more or less associate with devotees in living in a solitary place. Solitary place is not like the yogis who go to the Himalayan mountains and just sit there. I mean, that's okay too, but we're here to preach. So we live amongst devotees in a devotional atmosphere. That's living in a solitary place. Solitary means away from the general mass of people. Nor do we bring in the activities of the general mass of people into the holy place. We don't watch TV or read newspapers or engage in sporting events, you know. Okay? Okay, so. And then philosophical research into the absolute truth. That's another part. So, studying the scriptures. There are so many scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. These are all authorized scriptures that have great philosophical knowledge. One must study the scriptures if one wants to become fixed in spiritual life. The scriptures do two things. They purify consciousness simply by reading them, because they are the words of the Lord of the Lord, words of the Lord's pure devotees. And they give us a clear understanding of the absolute truth. And they also help us to detect and guard against Maya. We have to know what Maya is, and we have to know how to guard against it. So the scriptures give us that knowledge, that understanding. So one has to study the scriptures. Srila Prabhupada used to say we should read these books at least. He said different times, different things in different places. One time he said 2 hours a day, one time he said 3 hours a day, one time he said we should have classes from morning till night throughout the whole day. And one time he said 5 hours. So he's given different formulas, but ultimately there should be some study. Not that someone is so fully engaged in performing spiritual activities they have no time to read or study these books. Because when Maya attacks, if we're not versed in the scriptures, then we won't know how to, first of all, we won't even know how to detect Maya, two, we won't even know how to guard against it. So we have to know Maya, how she works. So there's philosophical research into the absolute truth. Of course, that's more specific in the sense that we can learn about the nature of the absolute truth through the scriptures. What is the nature of the absolute truth? What is the philosophy that the basis of that nature? This philosophy is transcendental. It's not material. Okay. So these are some points. So Krishna explains that all these items I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. So I'll finish reading the purport. As far as self-realization is concerned, it's clearly stated that bhakti yoga is especially practical. As soon as there is a question of devotion, one must consider the relationship between the super soul and the individual soul. The individual soul and the super soul cannot be one, at least not in the bhakti conception, the devotional conception of life. This service of the individual soul to the supreme soul is eternal, nityam. That is clearly stated. So bhakti or devotional service is eternal. One should be established in that philosophical conviction. So Mayavadis think that the Lord and the living entity are separate, but when there becomes liberation, then they become one. And there's no question of service anymore. So service exists both in the conditioned state and in the liberated state. There's always the conception of two, the object and the subject. The object is Krishna and the subject is devotional service to Krishna performed by the living entity. So this conception of two is eternal. That is, there's two souls within the body, not just one. The Lord exists there as the Supreme Soul, giving direction, giving guidance, and witnessing the activities of the individual soul, who is simply trying to enjoy the body and the extensions of the body. The living entity, the Super Soul, is trying to divert his attention away from these things and towards himself. So this relationship between the soul and the super soul is eternal, both in all stages of existence, both conditional and liberated. So Prabhupada goes on in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1-11. This is explained. Vedanti tatvad vidyams tatvad yat jnanam avyayam. Those who are actually knowers of the truth know that the self is realized in three different phases: as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Bhagavan is the last word in the realization of the absolute truth. Therefore, one should reach up to that platform of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus engage in the devotional service of the Lord. That is the perfection of knowledge. So Prabhupada concludes here that perfection of knowledge ultimately ends up in devotional service to the Lord. So then he sums up the whole thing. Beginning from practicing humility up to the point of realization of the Supreme Truth, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, this process is just like a staircase beginning from the ground floor and going to the top floor. Now on this staircase there are so many people who have reached the first floor, the second and the third floor, etc. But unless one reaches the top floor, he will be frustrated. It is clearly stated that without humility, understanding is not truly possible. To think oneself God is most puffed up. Although the living entity is always being kicked by the stringent laws of material nature, he still thinks, I am the God, because of ignorance. The beginning of knowledge, therefore, is amanitvam, humility. One should be humble and know that he is subordinate to the Supreme Lord, due to rebelliousness, due to rebellion against the Supreme Lord, one becomes subordinate to material nature, and one must know and be convinced of this truth. So Prabhupada gives a nice understanding of what humility is. Humility is not simply acting in a certain way. It's actually a process of knowledge, of knowing one's subordinate position. And that knowledge manifests itself by devotion to the Supreme Lord or by following the directions of the Lord. If one is humble and dependent on the Lord naturally, one will want to follow the Lord, and that is called humility. So humility is not just something that we exhibit in a characteristic way and then act in a different way. In other words, people say, oh, he's so humble, but yet he's doing so many other things. He's acting, he doesn't surrender to the Lord, he doesn't perform devotional service, he doesn't chant, but he's humble. That's not humility. Humility is understood that humility means one understands their subordinate nature. And subordinate means dependent. Dependent means to get shelter from the Lord. So, and that comes in the form of taking instructions from the Lord and from the Lord's representatives. So that is really humility. And that means giving up one's rebellious nature. So these 20, for the sake of those who just came in, I'll read those 20 items again and give a little summary of it. So Krishna's explaining humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of the false ego, perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. Krishna says, all these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. So these are the items of knowledge as listed here. And as Prabhupada summarized the point that without unalloyed devotion to the Lord, the other 19 items of knowledge really have no meaning. So it all culminates in devotional service. And if one performs devotional service, then one will simultaneously cultivate all these other 19 items. So devotional service is the, as here Sig said, explained, Mayi Chananya Yogena Bhakti Bhaktir Abhyanchayani, the process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service of the Lord, the other 19 items are of no particular value. But if one takes a devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within. But we also try to cultivate these items as we perform our devotional service. So there's a cultivation of these things. One should cultivate humility. One should cultivate pridelessness. One should practice nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control. These have to be practiced. If we're claiming to be engaged in devotional service, but we're not at least trying to develop these qualities consciously, and then our devotional service is really within the modes. It's still tinged by the modes of passion and ignorance. So, therefore, one has to cultivate or try to develop these qualities which are conducive to one's devotional service. So these things are all conducive to successful devotional service. And sometimes people mistakenly think, well, I'm a devotee, I can just do whatever I want. I can be in a mode of ignorance or a mode of passion, or I can do things that are categorized in these modes and still be considered a devotee. No. One has to execute the process and with these qualities. And these qualities are all modes of goodness. So from there, one develops to the transcendent path. And that's a very important point, because we find within our society people have taken this statement by Prabhupada that if you just serve Krishna, everything else will come, and without really understanding deeply what that means. So to serve Krishna means what? It means many things by just other than just performing an activity. There's a certain consciousness and there's a certain a way to do things that is what it would be categorized as favorable devotional service. Because Kapila Deva in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam explains that there's devotional service in the mode of ignorance, devotional service in the mode of passion, and devotional service of the mode of goodness, and then there's Sudhasattva, devotional service that is free from all the three modes. So if we read those, we find what are the different contaminations within the different modes. Okay, these are a few points. We just finished up this verse. We've been on this verse for 1 week now, at least. So that concludes this verse. We've been taking each of these qualities different night and explaining two or three of the different qualities. So this is a summary of the whole. Any questions or comments on these points? Yes.
Could you explain the service of different modes?
Well, that's explained in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where devotional service in the mode of ignorance is one cultivates a separatist mentality. He becomes envious of others and he sees that the spiritual master and the Lord are the only ones that are important, and he sees other devotees as competitors to himself, and he doesn't have any relationship with the general mass of people. He considers everybody else to be just useless carnies. he's a separatist, he's envious, and he's fraught with qualities such as lust and anger. So more or less a separatist mentality. He thinks his servant's the most important service. Like that. I would have to read the exact details, but I believe service in the mode of passion is desiring fruitive results. In other words, one develops a fruitive mentality in their service attitude. They work for results, and when they get the results, they're enlivened. When they don't get the results, they become somewhat depressed. They lose their enthusiasm. They're result oriented. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Karmanavyadikaras te ma phalechu kadachanam. Ma karma phalahetu bhur ma te sangasta karmani. He says you have a right to perform your duty, but you're not entitled to the results of activities. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. So you must serve, but at the same time, You're not the cause of the results of your activities. And you shouldn't be attached to them either. You have to work, but it's not dependent on you. The person of motive passion thinks by their endeavors things are happening or not happening. It's by me. Look what I have done. And if I don't do this, then it will not. Everyone else will be affected. You know, so they consider themselves to be, you know, somewhat the doer. And therefore they consider themselves to be the enjoyer. So that's what I said, it's a fruitive mentality. But Krishna, Rupa Goswami explains, and that the pure devotional service is free from philosophical speculation on the absolute truth and the desire for fruitive results. It's done with the desire to please Krishna. And it's favorably done. It's in relationship to Krishna with a desire to please Krishna. That's pure devotional service. So, the mood of detachment is there. We try to serve Krishna. And that effort is what is called devotion. The effort is devotion, not the results. The results Krishna may give and he may not give. You can work hard and nothing can happen, and you can do nothing one day and so many things can happen. It's not up to you. Right? It's like that. But still, we have to make an effort. Our effort is our offering to Krishna. The energy, time, and effort and quality we put in our activities is the nature of our devotion. So we have to do that, but we have to understand at the same time the results are not dependent on that. So Krishna said to Arjuna, fight for the sake of fighting. Never consider happiness or distress, victory or defeat, honor or dishonor, loss or gain. He said, give up lethargy and false ego and fight. Fight for me. So we do it to please Krishna. That's all. And we have to develop an attraction for Krishna. Otherwise, we won't be able to do our service for Krishna. We may do it out of some motivation, but ultimately, as the years go by, we have to develop an attraction for Krishna. Otherwise, there's no motivation. We'll lose our motivation after some time, unless we develop an attraction for Krishna. And then that attraction becomes the motivation for service.
I kind of asked a question about it. I'm glad you answered it, because I had it kind of wrong.
We all do. Not you. It's natural.
I got this. You know, sometimes, for example, sometimes when I'm addressing a deity, you work real hard at trying to make it the best you can, and sometimes, no matter how hard you try, the result doesn't come out like you hoped it would.
Yeah, but that's okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I used to worry about it.
Well, you should worry about it, but at the same time, you should worry about it, but your worrying should only increase your desire to do it better the next time. But sometimes, you see, there is called transcendental anxiety, which means that anxiety to serve Krishna nicely brings about an increase in our service. When the anxiety brings a decrease in our service, it's material. So if we're trying to do something and the results don't come out, and then we give up our service, or we go away, or we decrease, then that effort was really to please us, not to please Krishna. And when we didn't find ourselves being pleased, we lose our enthusiasm. So even if the results don't come out, there should be some a little anxiety, but that anxiety means the next time I'm going to do it better and even do it nicer. I'm going to try harder. When Krishna called the gopis came, but when they came, he left. Why did he leave after he called them? They were pure unalloyed devotees to the Lord. They gave up everything just to see Krishna. But when he came, when they came to see Krishna, he left. Why? To increase their love. Because he knew that by his leaving, their love would increase more and more. So he wanted to increase their love, so he left. So that's devotion. So when we try to serve Krishna and it doesn't work out, we should just think of how to do it nicer and better the next time. Try harder. Not that we say, oh, forget this. We're not the doer. And sometimes you may not even try hard on anything. You get so many nice results. Things just come. Yeah, it's just everything's up to Krishna. Yes?
As we often hear, the causeless mercy is completely causeless. Should we take it face value, or is there...
Yes, causeless mercy is there. Yeah, causeless mercy means that there's nothing you have done to earn that mercy. Prabhupada used to say, I've created your pious activities. So causeless means that it's coming, but it's simply due to Krishna's will. It's not like something you earned. It's causeless. Okay, time for Sri Arti. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.